Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us here on The Conversation. It is Monday, March 3rd. Protests are springing up around the country and here in the islands over the sharp federal budget cuts and the speed at which government workers are being laid off. A number of events are planned for this week to demonstrate displeasure with Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency. Among the cuts include federal workers who have not passed their probationary period. We take a closer look at the impacts of one such cut. It has to do with the reforestation of native forests in our wildlife refuges, home to our critically endangered birds. You'll hear the heartbreak of one worker as he tries to continue his work after getting the dreaded email that his job has been terminated. The wrangling over the legality of the cuts continues in court, but leaves thousands of public servants in emotional turmoil. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. On Wednesday evening, expect to see protesters gather in Waikiki in front of the Tesla showroom at the International Marketplace. It's to protest against Elon Musk and his recent actions as part of the Department of Government Efficiency. It was announced at a Saturday rally organized by a newly formed group called Allies in Resistance. Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke was on hand as the crowd marched to the statue of Patsy Mink, the author of Title IX, the Equality in Education Act. You'll hear Luke first, and then Congressman Takuda. While President Donald Trump promised not to touch Social Security, his administration announced 7,000 workers will lose their jobs. It's already started making deep cuts to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which some fear is a prelude to privatizing the National Weather Service. Trump also plans to lay off thousands of workers at the EPA.
When I heard about this event from Chuck and Ann and Nancy and how they, on a daily basis, woke up and turned on the TV and thought that yesterday was the worst day that could happen. And the next day they turn on the TV and it gets worse and worse on a daily basis. And they felt they needed to do something. And when we need to do something, what is government about? Government is for the people. It's by the people, of the people. And we continue to forget that that is what government is all about. And all of you folks are part of what makes the state and what makes the nation good. Good at its core and righteous at its core. And for people like me and for people like Jill and for people like Ikaika and Della and former Mayor Caldwell and so many of you who are here because they want to get their voices heard and they cannot be silenced.
EPA is a critical lifeline. If we just think back to the fires, who really makes sure that we were safe? The air quality, the water monitoring, the debris removal, all of these different processes, making sure that the batteries that were burned were safely taken off island. That was the EPA right there on the front line, working directly with our people. When you think about Red Hill, and again, monitoring and making sure that we're doing this well, accountably, and with fidelity, that's the EPA. The fact that we've had thousands of EPA employees cut across the country, it will absolutely 100% hurt Hawaii as well. We rely on their expertise to be able to provide us services in those times when we need it most, just like during wildfires, God forbid, fuel spills. What happens when we call for help and no one's there to pick up the phone? That's the situation we're going to find ourselves in sooner than later, and it's absolutely unacceptable that this can be allowed to continue.
And the cuts to NOAA.
Just because you don't believe in climate change doesn't mean you fire all the forecasters and fire all the individuals that are actually trying to help protect us from these extreme weather conditions, which, by the way, that's climate change. That's exactly what that is. These individuals save lives. When we think about how do we protect ourselves, should we have conditions that could create a wildfire like what we saw in Lahaina again? What about tsunamis? What about hurricanes? We're heading towards hurricane season. As we know, right now, it doesn't take a hurricane to be absolutely destructive and life-threatening. We need those individuals with the expertise and knowledge to be able to help protect us. And firing forecasters, firing folks from the National Weather Service, getting rid of NOAA that's helping us try to mitigate and adjust and be prepared for all this climate chaos that we're seeing, this is gonna impact lives. This is gonna hurt people and communities. And that's why we have got to make sure that they are not allowed to continue. In fact, bring them back, bring those workers back.
there will be cuts to Social Security, even though the president promised when he was running for office that he would not touch it.
Just absolute lies. He said he wouldn't touch Social Security. He said he wouldn't cut Medicaid. Yet we know going into the budget negotiations the next few weeks, chopping block right there, Medicaid. Gonna impact Medicare, healthcare for seniors. Everyone from Keiki to Kupuna will be impacted on their ability to have healthcare and food on the table. And this is supposedly the administration that ran on the premise of, I'm gonna help you bring down the cost of your eggs. And last time I checked, you can't even find eggs.
That was Congresswoman Jill Takkuta and Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke, who were at a weekend rally. There is to be a protest at the Tesla showroom in Waikiki Wednesday, as well as a gathering on Friday evening at the Church of the Crossroads to discuss issues around immigration. State Attorney General Ann Lopez is expected to attend. Today we hear from one of the estimated 2,200 probationary federal workers in the Department of the Interior terminated under orders of Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency. HBR first reported the story of Eric Preston Hamron. He was 2 months shy of permanent status at the National Fish and Wildlife Service. He got the bad news on Valentine's Day. HBR's Maddie Bender met him back in December at Beginner Bird School, which he runs as a volunteer. The weekend class has a wait list that's now more than 2 years long. It takes place at the Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge on the Big Island. Half of the refuge's field staff got walking papers. If you don't know about Hakalau, it's hailed as a great success story where habitat of Hawaii's endangered birds has been restored and the birds are thriving. We immerse you in bird school.
Aloha, welcome. I'm glad we finally are getting you guys all in Beginner Bird School. I know a lot of you have been on the wait list for a year, some of you even longer than a year at this point, but I think we're gonna have a good group. We're gonna have a great weekend. My name is Eric. We're gonna go around really quick and just do introductions. If you could just—
Four times a year, around 20 lucky bird watchers get to drop everything and spend a weekend at the Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge. Eric Preston Hamron runs Beginner Bird School as a volunteer for the Hawaii chapter of the Wildlife Society. He also worked in Hakalau for his day job. He's the one that taught us that apapane make a sound like R2-D2, the impish droid from Star Wars.
The whole thing is all apapane.
The Namakihi sounds like they're playing laser tag.
Namakihi. Star Wars guns. Pew, 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 pew.
Or the Noma'o, the Hawaiian thrush, can sound like little DJs.
Anyone hearing that Noma'o? Wicker, 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 wicker.
To explain why Beginner Bird School exists, you need to understand its creator. So picture Eric a decade ago. He's moved from Utah to Hawaii and bounced around a bit. He's working as a server at the Cheesecake Factory in Waikiki, but he wants to pivot to a career in conservation. So he applies and gets accepted to a birding program organized by the state. It's an intensive week-long training to teach conservation professionals how to perform bird survey point counts. When Eric gets to this program, he immediately realizes he's the only one there not already working full-time in wildlife conservation. Eric says he modeled Beginner Bird School on the state program to address an unmet need.
I created this because this is something I wish had existed when I was learning birds, and I was volunteering my time to help with bird surveys, volunteering with different organizations for forest restoration. And I knew that if I was willing to take days off, to go to these really remote wild places, which were special to me, other people would be wanting to do that as well. But not knowing of these opportunities or how to access these opportunities, because a lot of times the barrier is skills training.
While the state's program was designed for people already in the know, Beginner Bird School helps students start developing their skills.
A lot of the people who come are people who have lived here their whole life and have never seen these species, or they're K-12 school teachers, and they're wanting to take this knowledge and these experiences back for their family, for their students, I just want people to be able to connect and have the opportunities I had in an approachable way, and what they do with it is their own. Maybe some of them go from working as a server at Cheesecake Factory and then switching gears and working on conservation, but maybe they just want to be able to go outside and know what they're hearing as they go hiking.
Katie Lehman and Kelly Kamehana Ikameno Opukanala Graf are amateur birders from Oahu. They heard about Beginner Bird School on Instagram. I'd driven with them from the airport and in my head had nicknamed them the Oahu girlies. Think Lululemon clothing, fuzzy slippers, huge suitcases. Kelly brought her own fluffy sheets from home, and it got cold enough at night that I was a little jealous of her. Kelly works in commercial real estate, and Katie is a product developer and an artist. In the car, they said they were most looking forward to seeing EEV, scarlet honeycreepers. That evening, I happened to come across them sitting in tall grass and looking up in wonder at a mamane tree.
Which one of you said you'd be so excited to see an EEV?
Me, but both of us.
How do you feel now that you have seen probably dozens? You cried.
Yeah. Katie starts.
It was like at dusk and the sun was going down and the whole sky was pink and purple and orange. And we were just laying in this tall grass and we saw the first birds fly over us were Apapane, I think. And we were just like, oh my God, like we have entered heaven. Like we've entered the Garden of Eden, and like we were just completely blown away that this is what we've ascended upon. We're really lucky to be here. I feel really blessed to be here.
When we were looking at the mamane tree and there were just like five EEV playing in the tree, drinking the nectar of the flowers, I was jaw dropped, just in awe. And that was the most impactful moment because that was the first time I realized how abundant they were here. And I was just couldn't believe that I was sitting in real life watching this.
Katie DeFossis maintains trails for work, and hikers ask her all the time, what birds am I hearing? She signed up for Beginner Bird School so she could give them the answer. As we walked around the cabins in Hakalau, we tried in vain to identify this bird. Spoiler alert, it was an Oma'o. Katie told me she wasn't supposed to go to bird school until November 2025.
And I was like, okay, perfect. That gives me time to learn. And then Eric's like, can you make it? What was that, last week or the week before? I was like, I guess so. Why not? But I mean, that's what this is for, is to learn.
And as we walked around Hakalau, Katie pointed out just how different the forest is from what people picture when they think of Hawaii. She'd just been to the Hawaii Nei art exhibition in Hilo, and she'd sent a photo of one of the paintings to her mom.
She's like, which one did you vote for? Because you get to pick one. So I voted for that one as my favorite. It's just a puilana mamane bush. My mom's like, that doesn't scream Hawaii to me at all. And I'm like, you know what's funny about that, though, actually, is this is like what should scream Hawaii. I explained it to her, and she's like, man, that's really sad that I would say something like that. I'm like, yeah. But the thing is that's how people view it, right? People don't know. Even on Oahu, I heard, if you used to look up above Honolulu, it used to be mamane forest there is what it was originally. Mm-hmm. So Pulilower right spread there too. So it's crazy that they're only here now.
Kelly shared a similar sentiment. She said the whole experience has made her rethink conservation and her place in it.
When we first got into birding and you learn about the history of how many honeycreepers we had in Hawaii and the decline, it's really a scary process of understanding, and you think that there's no hope. And then all of a sudden you stumble on a place like Hakalau and the EEV and the Apapane are abundant and the just common background noise is native birds. And you think, wow, this is how it should be. So for me, it's added a sense of motivation to work towards a mission of just expanding places like this.
We do have to take a break for the emergency alert system for the first of the month. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Let's get back to Beginner Bird School, a story produced by HPR's Maddie Bender.
Spending time in Hakalau around so many native birds can feel a bit detached from reality, but Eric's gotten used to it.
Some students comment on it because they notice I'm not using binoculars very much. And they're like, well, like, don't you want to look at it? And I'm like, I saw that bird yesterday.
What sparks joy for him is enabling bird school students to forge their own connections with Hakalau, and in doing so, make a commitment to giving back to the forest and the program. Take staffing. Beginner Bird School is now run almost entirely by volunteers who are alumni of the program. They prepare the cabins, cook, and wash dishes so that current students can leave their normal lives for a weekend and be full-time birders. Eric says the most rewarding moments for him come from seeing the birds through the eyes of his students.
Our first class had an airline pilot, a school teacher, a prison caseworker, and they were able to come up here and have an experience completely different from their normal life, and something that they were interested in but had no idea how to, you know, get involved, and then had the experience, and then now I've seen them, I bump into them on the trails, I bump into them at events, and now, you know, they're really embracing this conservation mindset of protecting native species and protecting wild places that we have here and watching them grow.
Everyone at Beginner Bird School was there to learn, including the people who came in with quite a bit of bird knowledge, like Sean McCurdy, who aced a birding pretest that Eric sent all the participants. Sean is tall, bearded, and soft-spoken. He gives off the vibe of a very quiet lumberjack. I'd assumed he worked some type of conservation job that required an encyclopedic knowledge of native birds, but I was wrong.
I guess my full-time job is I'm a tour guide and business owner, I do also, I'm a boat captain as well, and so mostly do like the manta ray snorkels and Kalakakua Bay snorkels over in Lacuna Sed. I mean, I always had like a somewhat interest in birds. I always had like birds when I was growing up, little parakeets or cockatoo, the nene over there.
Sean called in a few favors to make sure he could attend.
I was actually supposed to work the boats today and tomorrow. The company I work for, we have a few other captains that are like fill-in captains. And so, yeah, I just was like, can you guys work for me on Saturday and Sunday? I want to go to the bird school. Everyone was like, bird school? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to bird school. I'm like, okay, Sean, you're going to bird school. All right. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to go. Thank you for covering me.
Sean told me about this wild moment he had at bird school, off on his own, when he saw a family of a Kiapola owl, a species of endangered Hawaiian honeycreeper. There are fewer than 2,000 of these birds left in the wild, and Hakalau is home to 70% of them. A Kiapola owl are the only native birds in Hawaii that look and act like a woodpecker. Sean heard one drilling into the side of a tree.
I was literally sitting in some grass, like next to some koa, and then I was just like, I thought I heard their calls, but it wasn't like the long call, like their song, it was like the call, and then I heard that tut, 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 and I was like, okay, that's the wind blowing the things. Then I heard it again, and then I heard it again, and I was like, that is not, that's something. And so then I like looked, and I was like, oh my gosh, they're right there. So I just got lucky.
How does it make you feel, or what does it mean for you to see some of these native forest birds in their wild habitat, you know, not in captivity?
I mean, I was super overjoyed, and then it wasn't until like later, like literally like I broke down, like with so much emotion and so much excitement, I was just like, this is insane. And it's just really awesome to see this community came together, built this forest, and now all these birds are like flourishing in it. And so that to me is like the coolest part about all this stuff, is just like, we did this, and now the birds are even happier. It's crazy. It's like how fast, if you give nature some help, like how fast it can help itself.
Here's some of that history that Sean is talking about. The Hakalau forest grew naturally over the course of millions of years. But since Western contact, introduced plants and livestock decimated the Koa and Ohia forest. By the middle of the 20th century, across the state, the birds were barely hanging on. Community members, nonprofits, and the Fish and Wildlife Service banded together and made their last stand at Hakalau. They pieced together land donations and acquisitions, and in 1985 created the Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge. But Fish and Wildlife had their work cut out for them. Their new refuge was filled with non-native plants, and cattle and feral pigs ran wild. So staff and volunteers constructed a fence around the perimeter and began efforts to eradicate invasive species within the refuge. At the same time, they planted nearly 700,000 native trees. And after decades of restoration efforts, something incredible happened. The birds flourished. Now, some think they're reaching their carrying capacity in Hakalau, the maximum population the area can sustain. Eric says the recent history of the Hakalau Forest is a unique comeback story about native biodiversity. But maybe it shouldn't be.
There are some increases happening in other areas of the island, but a lot of them haven't been fenced as long as here or have had as much restoration efforts as here. But Hakalau is such a special place where all of this forest restoration has happened from the community, and the birds responded and are using even young koa trees you find the birds in, and they just responded immediately.
Most of bird watching consists of walking around or lying in wait for something to happen. These slower periods are punctuated by catching sight of an elusive bird or hearing one call out for the first time. It's hard to describe, but those moments feel electric. We had spent all morning tracking an Akeopola owl, and no one was more excited to see it than Malia Dela Cruz, an elementary school teacher in Pune. She said she went into education to nurture the next generation because she's lost faith in most adults. Malia has chunky glasses and long black hair, and that day she was wearing a jean jacket embroidered with an Eevee on the back. It was around the holidays, and Malia had been writing a 12 Manu of Christmas song to the tune of the 12 Days of Christmas. Seeing and hearing this extremely rare bird would be the metaphorical topper to her Christmas tree. Moments before we were set to head back to the cabins, a volunteer caught sight of an Akeopola owl, and we raced down the gravel, binoculars in hand. The bird song is like a little signature, spelling out Akeopola owl in cursive.
Try to keep your eyes on it. If you can see the bird through the binoculars while it makes the sound, now it's really gonna click for you.
Everyone was trying to be as quiet as possible, but I could tell they were freaking out. I walked away with Malia and another bird school student, Kayla Cachola Tom.
Wait on that one all morning. So many close calls.
What a way to end the morning.
I was amazed. I was like jaw dropped.
I love how clear the binoculars can go that close.
I know. It's like seeing a celebrity you've been hunting for. And Eric was so right. Like, I was watching it with my whatever. But I like saw it up close with my binoculars while it was making the noise.
And it's like the beak.
Yeah.
Mm. Pretty cool.
It was beautiful. When we saw the Akeopola owl, after searching for it all morning, literally my jaw dropped and I was so excited. I will remember that. I will remember its beak, like foraging on the bark, and just, it was fascinating and unique, and you can't get that doing anything else. Like everything we have nowadays, it's like you can play back and watch it again or something, but because it's so organic and it just makes it more precious, I guess. And then it's a moment that's gone and cannot be recreated again. Because you could try to take out your camera and film it. You have to live in the moment. You have to be super present. And then even if it takes hours to see one bird, it's totally worth it. you get this sense of just relief and that, oh my gosh, and just enthusiasm and connection. So I appreciate that.
As we walked away, Malia said she couldn't wait to tell her students about the Akeopola owl.
This song for my kids. Mm-hmm. And Akeopola owl is number 7. So it's the hardest one to say, like day 7. Yeah. But I was like, guys, this is such a cool bird. It's like a woodpecker. And they make little hand motions. So they do the bottom beak and they kind of scoop it. So I was like, oh my gosh, I just saw that. Like I could tell my kids, I saw the beak and he was eating. It's going to be so cool.
Number 12, day of Christmas, how long it to me. 12, la-la-la, 11, pa-lila, 10, a-keppa, 9, e-o, 8, elepio, 7, alavia, 6, akeopola owl, 5, big fat lady, 4, almighty, 3, oma, o, 2, apapane, and 1, ee, bird, and 1, ohia, tree.
There was one more thing I wanted to ask Eric about. As we were driving up Mana Road to the Hakalau Forest, Eric gestured out the window to our surroundings. All of it used to be home to palila, a species of finch-billed honeycreeper that feeds on mamane trees. Those trees are gone now. They've been replaced by thick patches of an invasive shrub called gorse. There are only 300 palila left in the wild.
Do you ever feel sad looking at, like, even what Hakalau is today, but also when you leave the forest and get into the part that hasn't been restored, that didn't have that community effort?
I think people who work in conservation are chronic optimists. And honestly, it's because we have no choice. We're surrounded by doom. We're the extinction capital of the world in Hawaii. What feels like an insurmountable task that we're never going to accomplish. And gorse specifically, even if we had the goal of eradicating that one invasive plant, it would be a 500-year challenge because the seeds last so long in the ground. They seed within their first year. It's an uphill battle. But you know, you turn that corner and then you see the fence and Hakalau on the other side, and immediately that spark of hope. Oh, it can be done. And then you look at maps over time of all the areas that have been fenced and are having restoration, and you can see the patchwork of these protected areas starting to connect. And, you know, you realize we're just one piece of this larger puzzle. Beginner bird school, me teaching people about birds, allows them to take it home, allows them to hopefully go volunteer for other groups, allows teachers to take it to their classrooms and teach the kids about it and hopefully spark that. And then hopefully those kids want jobs in conservation or they want to go volunteer. Suddenly you feel connected. It's not just me at beginner bird school or me at my little, you know, native plant nursery down in Hilo. It's you're part of this bigger picture and all of us together are working towards it. But if you look down and only look at the problems you're facing, you can feel really isolated and, you know, it's can really quickly get very dark. But if we give up, then these species go extinct and these forests slowly disappear. And in my lifetime, that's not an option.
Not an option. That was a segment on Beginner Bird School produced by HPR's Maddie Bender. Coming up, the story continues. We hear how Eric Preston Hamrin, the creator of the program and an employee of the Fish and Wildlife Service, was fired.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from HMSA, celebrating over 85 years of dedication in supporting the health and well-being of the people of Hawaii with a commitment to caring for the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
The Trump administration has fired thousands of probationary employees at federal agencies, a move halted last week by a federal judge who said it was likely illegal. Those already fired include half of the field staff at the Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge, owned by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Eric Preston Hamron, who runs Beginner Bird School, was one of those employees. Maddie Bender called him for an update.
Well, first, let me set your levels. So could you state name, title, and what you had for breakfast this morning?
Yes. And I assume by title, you mean former title.
Well, that's up to you, right?
Yes. My name is Eric Preston Hamron. I am formerly the plant restoration and propagation lead at Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge. And today for breakfast, I had yogurt.
Tell me what it was like to wake up and find out you were being fired.
Yeah. So I primarily work in the field. So that's up in the National Wildlife Refuge, not so much in the office. So we kind of knew this was coming. It was really uncharacteristic for a new administration to ask for lists of probationary employees from all the agencies. And so that already had our little red flags waving. And then all of the things going on with the deferred resignation emails that were coming out and the level of disrespect in the language within those emails directed towards federal employees. And you could really tell that they were making the relationship toxic as a encouragement to get people to quit or fire or take the resignation. So we kind of knew things were coming down the pipeline. I had always told myself the day after the resignation period ends is when they're probably going to start making cuts, and it would probably be probationary employees first. So I sort of knew that in the back of my head, tucked away. Something's coming, and it's probably coming for me and many of the people I work with. Mm-hmm. When the deferred resignation ended on, I believe it was a Wednesday, and I started hearing about USDA and a lot of other agencies firing employees on Thursday, we thought, well, maybe Department of Interior is going to be okay. Not that I agree with what was going on, but, you know, you kind of are like, maybe we in our little department, Fish and Wildlife Service, and us in this little refuge up on the mountain, maybe we're not on their radar. Maybe they're just going to focus on these other departments. And by the time they get to Department of Interior, I'm 2 months away from finishing probationary period. My coworker was 3 weeks away from finishing. Maybe by the time they come to us, we'll be past our year and we'll be okay. But that wasn't the case. So we had a group of kupus, AmeriCorps service members from across Hawaii, up there all week doing service projects with us, helping out at the refuge. There were 15 of them. So we were very busy that week leading this group. And then Friday morning, we got up around 6 o'clock, and we all started to do morning protocol, sunrise protocol. We were doing an OLI, started around 6:30 and went until sunrise. So we just had this wonderfully spiritual, peaceful experience outside watching the sunrise, doing OLI, came inside and opened up my email just to glance at it like I do most mornings on my work phone, and saw, it was about 7:20, saw an email saying, the title didn't say anything in the email, the title just said, update to probationary employees. And I immediately knew what that was. And it was an invite to a, you know, an online meeting. So I just knew. I had heard stories from the day before of people watching pre-recorded videos and an email coming out with short notice. I just knew, like, this is it. I called my manager, and she hadn't heard anything at all. She had no idea that this was happening yet. And so she said, keep me updated. Find a way to get me the information that comes across to you. I went outside because my cuckoo was out watering in the greenhouse, and I just called out, it's happening. It's happening right now. And she just knew what that meant and came running up. And at 8 o'clock, so about a little over 30 minutes after we got the email, was the meeting. And it was pretty to the point. Luckily, it was Fish and Wildlife National people talking to us. It was pre-recorded, but they did a really good job ensuring that we felt that this wasn't our fault, that this wasn't performance-based, and that we had all the resources that we were going to need, but still how quickly it was happening. Meanwhile, I have a group of 15 volunteers up at the refuge with us that we're responsible for that have just had this incredible week of service. And so before I went into the meeting, I passed a note to one of their leaders just saying, I'm about to get fired. Let's keep a straight face. Let's finish out the day before we tell anybody. Like, let's not ruin their last day. So, you know, once that meeting ended, I'm having to walk out of the room constantly to go cry in order to come back and put on a face for all of the service members, and very quickly hopped to my computer to try and finish up business that had been started, you know, informing people I had upcoming meetings with what was happening, trying to complete the last purchase items that I had pending, ensuring all my files got passed on to the next person so that way all the work can continue. Fortunately, because we sort of knew this was coming, I had pulled off all of my personnel files, all my job performance reviews, my pay stubs, all of that stuff. Once you lose access to government computers, it's really hard to get a hold of all that information. So I had pre-downloaded all of those things and had printed copies, but all of my regular work files, all of the data, all of that needed to get passed on. So I was rushing to get as much off of the computer and available to other people as I could.
We have been hearing from Eric Preston Hamron, a former employee of the Fish and Wildlife Service. He had been working as a plant nursery lead at the Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge. We do, though, have to take a break for the test of the emergency alert system. Stay with us.
Support for HPR comes from the East-West Center's Pacific Islands Report, featuring news headlines, essays, and commentary from across the Pacific Islands at pireport.org. Messaging supported by the Turbin Chu Fund.
Let's get back to that conversation between HVR's Maddie Bender and Eric Preston Hamron, the creator of Beginner Bird School. Half of the field staff at the Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge were fired last month. And when we left off, he was still at the refuge, having just been given notice that he was being fired. It was Valentine's Day.
We left the refuge around noon and did a uhola'ia, mahalo oli, as we were leaving the refuge. And when that finished, we were all holding hands in a circle. I did Queen Liliuokalani's aloha oe, because now I'm saying goodbye to the refuge. And all of the kupus, of course, were very confused as to, because now I'm crying while I'm doing the Oli. And, you know, when I finished, I said, you know, I want to let you guys know that today's my last day. And all probationary employees are being fired, which includes a lot of the other staff that you guys worked with this week and got to know. Now, they were all crying, and we had a two-hour drive down the mountain. And by the time I got to the office, my computer access was closed. I tried to get back on my email to finish up things on the computer, and everything was locked. Wow. So it just became very real, very quick. And to be in the position of being fired, but still having to put on a positive face and your best foot forward, because you have a group of volunteers that you're responsible for, and you have a cuckoo that you're mentoring, that now she's running the nursery, and this is a leadership development program. It's not supposed to be a filling positions program. At the same time, trying to come to grips with the fact that, you know, when I left National Park Service, that was a big deal for me personally to move to the National Wildlife Refuge at Hakalau Forest was a big deal. My predecessor at Hakalau Forest had been there for almost 30 years, and I knew these restoration programs thrive when they have someone who stays in the position. Mm-hmm. So I made a commitment to stay at Hakalau for the next 20 to 30 years for the rest of my career and commit to this place and this forest and this island and this community that is supporting this, and to feel like I was letting everyone down, even though I knew it wasn't my fault, but also to feel like I wasn't upholding my promise to this place, to this forest, to these birds and these plants. It was really hard for me, but I'm still committed to being there. As long as I can, I'll be up there as a volunteer. And hopefully things line up for me to still be up there in some way or form. I don't know what hat I'll be wearing, but for now, my hat is a volunteer hat.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little more about what you were doing as nursery lead at Hakalau, all that that job entailed, so listeners can get a sense of what was deemed in some ways like not necessary.
So nursery lead and plant restoration entails restoring the upper portion of the refuge, which was formerly cattle ranch. And that's everything from collecting the seeds, cleaning the seeds, storing the seeds, growing those seeds into plants, maintaining the nursery while the plants are in their growing stage, and then overseeing the outplanting, the restoration component, and working with community groups and volunteers to initiate all of that. My predecessor averaged around 20,000 plants in the ground every year. And so we're trying to build back up to that point. Within all of those phases of plant restoration, there's endangered species, of which we have probably about 10 different endangered species that we propagate in the nursery, one of which was reduced to one individual, a native mint, Phylloscesia brevidens. We only had one individual left in the wild, and it was only found at Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge. So all the plants that we've grown in the nursery are all descended from that one individual. We have another plant, Claremontia pyrularia, Ojavai, was reduced to about four individuals in the wild. And, you know, we now have hundreds, if not 1,000, outplanted. We're dealing with these really rare, critically endangered species. And all of this restoration is providing habitat for all of these native birds. Akea pola au is a great example. It's endemic to Big Island, Hawaii. It's critically endangered. There's about 12 or 1,500 left in the wild, only on Big Island. 70% of those are found at Hakalau Forest because of all the restoration that's happened over the last 30, 35 years.
At least right now, it doesn't seem like this will impact beginner bird school. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. So beginner bird school is my nonprofit hat. When I'm not working for the government, I volunteer to run beginner bird school, which is hosted at Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge, but is run through the Wildlife Society Hawaii chapter. That program so far is secure because it operates through the Wildlife Society. It's not beholden to any federal funding, but with all of these staff cuts, typically a staff person is there to do a volunteer segment of beginner bird school. And I don't know if they're going to be available to do that. So for now, yes, beginner bird school is safe, but we are going to be needing to make adjustments potentially and be on our toes as more changes roll forward. And also, we want to make sure our presence at the refuge as beginner bird school is not harmful to the refuge. We don't want to be taking staff away that are desperately needed for more critical tasks now that they've lost half of their field staff.
Do you personally feel like it's an important thing to keep doing now, considering all the circumstances?
Oh, even more so. It already felt so important reconnecting people in Hawaii to Aina, reconnecting them to these birds and these plants that only exist in these high elevation places that are hard to access, that they don't get to interact with every day. Reconnecting them to these native species already felt so important, but now it's just critical. People don't understand what they're losing if they've never seen it.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is whether your philosophy has changed at all and some of the things you said to me. So you have this reflection near the end.
People who work in conservation are chronic optimists.
And then you also say, like,
if we give up, then these species go extinct and these forests slowly disappear. And in my lifetime, that's not an option.
Just reading those words back to you, what does that make you think about? Do you still believe that?
I do still believe that. And I do still think it's true for almost everyone who works in conservation and protecting endangered species. I think now, I think now our hearts are just broken, and it already felt like we were climbing an impossible mountain. And now that mountain just got more steep and more treacherous. The ability to work in conservation and get paid to me, I never take for granted because I would be volunteering whether I was getting paid or not. But to be able to get paid and do this as a job protects me and allows me to continue doing this. Without being a federal employee, my ability to do beginner bird school and to volunteer changes dramatically. I have to ensure I'm safe and my family is safe and my partner and I are safe and our household is supported. And that has to come first before my volunteering and going out and hiking through the forest. I can still do it on my days off, but if I'm working every day and I still have household responsibilities, my availability to volunteer changes. And I can only support beginner bird school in the way I've been doing it because I have paychecks. Trying to figure out where I stand and my ability to volunteer is challenged, but I definitely still have that belief because we can't accept defeat or these species go extinct.
That was Eric Preston Hamron and the conversation's Maddie Bender. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive on this conservation story. We can tell you that the nonprofit Friends of Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge has launched a fundraising campaign to try and rehire some staff to keep the nursery intact. Well, that does it for us for this hour. Tomorrow, how did the state's first job fair to hire displaced federal workers turn out? We talk to the state's director of human resources. Do you have a story idea to share with us? Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217. And a reminder, the conversation is available as a podcast on our website or on Spotify and Apple. I'm Catherine Cruz. We'll be back tomorrow with more of The Conversation.